So my talk is based on, I will try to talk about two topics. Number one and number two, if I have time. And the first one is the work done in collaboration with Shamit Kachrum. The only common thing of these two topics is that they both deal with non-standard cosmological clocks. So I'll try to explain what it means. So the first topic is that we discuss non-slow roll inflation on string moduli spaces. And actually, our conclusion is that if you take all good string moduli space slightly lifted by supersymmetry breaking, so inflation is generic on that space. Although our notion of who is rolling slowly, we have to revise a little bit on that moduli space. And the other one, if I have time, I want to discuss one particular point about large distance modification of gravity. So, as everybody knows better than me in this room, inflation is the idea of inflation is that we have a period of quasi-exponential expansion, so the Sitter type period in the universe, and then there is a clock which finishes this period. So now, in old inflation, this clock was tunneling. So we start in the false vacuum, and then we tunnel into the true vacuum. In the standard slow roll inflation, the clock is a scalar field. So we have a scalar field. We have a scalar field which is slowly rolling down the potential. And so so the Hubble parameter changes slowly. And so the clocks are the signal of end of inflation is the breakdown of the slow roll conditions. So there are two pretty standard slow roll conditions. So when they break down, this means inflation finished. Now, the problem that many people discussed is that in the string theory, if we discuss string theory and supergravity at the effective low energy field theory level, so that is important to comment on this. So in this kind of situation, there is to implement this low roll condition, there is something wrong with this. So. Is there another? Okay. Thank you. So this particular slow roll condition, which simply tells you that the inflaton should be lighter than the Hubble parameter, is hard to implement if inflation is driven by F terms. So you know where, as you know, the so as you know, the supergravity Lagrangians or effective string theory Lagrangians at low energy level, we can rewrite as effective supergravity potentials, and they consist of two terms. At least the positive ones are two terms, the so-called F terms and the D terms. And the F terms are accompanied by the so-called Keller metric. And the Keller has this property that it's not protected by any non-renormalization theorem. So Keller is generic. And so therefore, because it's generic, it generically generates the mass terms for the inflaton, which is of order Hubble. Because if you have F term which dominates inflation, then the mass is of order Hubble. Okay? So I did something. So what are the ways out? And this is a pretty general situation in effective low energy level in supergravity and string theories. So ways out could be that, okay, the inflation is dominated by the D term, okay, and then this problem will not arise because D term is not accompanied by the Keller. Or perhaps the Keller is protected by some underlying physics. The problem is that Keller cannot be protected by symmetries of effective low energy theories, but it may be protected by some underlying physics, which is not necessarily boiled down to a symmetry in effective field theory. And the example is, for instance, this the brain inflation, which is protected by locality in the extra space. So the idea is that you have two brains which slowly move towards each other, and the interbrain separation is the distance, is the inflaton, essentially. So as seen by an effective four-dimensional observer, this is just like a slowly rolling scalar field. Then these D-brains, if they are brain anti-brain, they annihilate, and you have tachyon condensation. So it's some kind of realization of hybrid inflation. So there were attempts to implement a very interesting attempts. We heard some of them during this conference by these people to realize inflation, slow roll inflation in string theory, in particular some brain type inflation in which motion of brains corresponds to the inflaton. And this is an ongoing effort. And so the path that we took with Shamit is a little bit different. So we decided not to look for the slow roll inflation and just say maybe there are other regimes which give us inflation. Okay, so situation is like this. So the conclusion is that this is the string theory moduli space or the landscape. So what we assume is that there is this moduli space which is lifted by supersymmetry breaking. So and we start in some particular initial condition like false vacuum. So you have this, let's say you start in the false vacuum, you wait there, inflate, then you tunnel. So when you tunnel, it's like this pinball game. So when inflaton tunnels and it draws down to the true vacuum, it goes through complicated subtle points. Now, at no point at this trajectory, the slow roll condition is satisfied. So the rolling of the inflaton is very fast. Actually, it draws down like crazy, oscillates about one subtle point, then about another one, etc. But because generically the exit from the saddle point and the entrance is perpendicular, so the system gets trapped by its own oscillations around each of the saddle points, and meanwhile system inflates. And so in this way, you start in the false vacuum, you tunnel, and you create a bubble, and then that bubble can exponentially expand because of the subsequent inflations. Okay, so that's what I want to discuss. And this situation seems to be pretty generic. What I want to mention is that, so in this way, the clock that finishes inflation is different from the velocity of the slowly moving scalar field. Now, there were one example of this kind of disentangling the two clocks is hybrid inflation by Linde. What Andrei showed that you can have the end of inflation triggered by the second field very abruptly, although the first field is pretty slowly rolling and is not suspecting anything. But our approach is more radical, because in our case, the clock which tells us that inflation should finish is not a local scalar field. It's an average amplitude of an oscillating scalar field, also of an oscillating modulus. And this average amplitude is not a local order parameter. So what changes slowly is the amplitude of the oscillating field. And therefore, you don't have to satisfy slow roll condition. Okay. So let me demonstrate this point by simple example. So let's take I will take system of two fields, okay? So we assume that these are two cross-coupled moduli. So what I wrote here in the black is the coupling coming from the superpotential. So this is, coupling in the potential which comes from the superpotential. So this is the coupling which is unsuppressed in the limit in which you restore supersymmetry, okay? And so there are these two flat directions in this particular case. The crucial property is that if I move along one of them, let's say I move along this capital phi, the other one gets heavy and gets nailed to zero, okay? And vice versa. So this is coming from the superpotential. And then this degeneracy is lifted by all possible corrections from Keller. Now, the generic corrections from Keller, they look like this. So basically, the only scale we're assuming in the theory is the supersymmetry breaking scale, capital M. And then the rest is suppressed by the Planck scale. So there are all possible corrections like this, okay? So therefore, you have this complicated landscape, which is lifted by supersymmetry breaking, has local minima, has saddle points, and let's see what happens, okay? So let's say we pick up one minimum in which, so what we are assuming is the typical expectation values of the fields are over the Planck scale, at least one of them, that's how we start the cosmology, this scenario. So we sit in this local minimum and we wait. So system inflates and then at some point we tunnel. So now what is the situation? As I told you, because the capital phi, so this is a direction phi and this is direction capital phi. So how does the potential look like? So potential has a true minimum. So once I have tunneled, the rest of the potential has a true minimum at some, little phi over the Planck scale, and the capital phi being zero. So true minimum is here. So this is, I tunneled from the false vacuum, and then there is a saddle point. So the point is that if I go along this big capital phi, everywhere the curvature in the perpendicular direction is becoming huge. This is just like in the hybrid models, okay? So therefore, so what happens is that this guy rolls down like crazy because its mass is bigger than Hubble parameter. We are not assuming any slow roll condition. Rolls down like crazy, But normally you would say, because Laurel condition is not satisfied along this trajectory, every way it's very steep, this will roll down like this, but that never happens. What happens is that this guy oscillates many times before finding the exit and rolling from the exit, because the exit from this saddle point is very narrow, and the velocity of this field is huge, okay? And so that's basically what happens.
Kinetic energy dominant?
No, kinetic energy very quickly becomes subdominant. I mean, initially it could be a little bit dominated by kinetic energy, but then it gets redshifted. So this is the picture, right? So basically, this is the capital phi direction, and this is the small phi direction. And so the picture is like this. This guy oscillates many times, and then until its amplitude drops to this window, and then it goes through. So the energy during this oscillation is composed by the energy of the false vacuum, which is supersymmetry breaking scale to the fourth, plus the energy of an oscillator. Okay? Now, energy of the oscillator depends on the amplitude. Now, you see that even initially, if the amplitude is the Planckian, if it is the Planck scale, they are comparable, but very quickly this becomes subdominant. And once it becomes subdominant, system inflates. So in other words, these oscillations, they are very efficient to keep the system on top of this saddle point. But they do not contribute to energy. So essentially, energy is constant. So therefore, the system inflates like as if the system is in the false vacuum, except that there is a clock. And the clock is the amplitude of this guy, right? And actually, when amplitude decreases so that it becomes comparable to the window, we go through and inflation finishes. So the expansion rate only depends on the Planck scale and the supersymmetry breaking scale in a given power, period. Okay. So in other words, let me again reiterate this. Basically, if we are expanding about the saddle point, right? So effective potential for this little phi, which corresponds to the tachyonic mode, which is the instability of the saddle point, is given by this oscillating guy and this the tiny negative mass, right? Because it's a supersymmetry breaking scale. So therefore, in the other words, the effective potential for this phi has wings up most of the time, and in a tiny window it has wings down. But this time is not enough to develop instability. So therefore, the system sits there until these wings really stay in the bottom. So. And meanwhile, this capital phi satisfies the equation of the usual story, is the oscillator which is damped, and so the amplitude redshifts like this, and so this fixes the number of e-foldings unitarily. There's no way to wiggle around. So number of e-foldings and the expansion factor is this, okay? So therefore, if you now translate this, how was the tunneling, the bubble expanded, so what's the final size of the bubble? The final size of the bubble is again given by two parameters, Planck scale versus supersymmetry breaking scale in power 7/3 divided by today's temperature. So now if you plug here numbers, you will see that we can accommodate supersymmetry breaking scale to be around 100 TeV. With bigger scale, the bubble will start becoming smaller than the present horizon size. We should see the walls of the bubble, right? And so with TeV, it's like much bigger than the present horizon. Now, what I want to mention is that this system was studied. We discovered that this system was studied very well, both numerically, I mean, especially numerically, by these people, Kaufman, Linde, Starobinsky, and then this same group with a couple of other collaborators. And their motivation was preheating. However, they noticed that at the end, you can produce some of the excitations of this other field because of parametric resonance. Perturbative decay is completely negligible. You can see it immediately. But because of parametric resonance, and those can induce additional e-foldings. Now, Andre told me that on the computer, they could only see one e-folding. He can correct me if I'm wrong. But anyway, so that additionally can prolong inflation, okay? Because of the matter that you produce can keep this longer inflation. It can keep us on the saddle point, okay? So now, let me discuss the density perturbations. So the point is that because inflationary scale is pretty low, it is so for the supersymmetry breaking scale, the standard mechanism for the density perturbation, actually there are no density perturbations because both of the fields are much heavier than the Hubble parameter during inflation. So the standard thing will not work. So we had to rework this mechanism that we proposed recently with Andrei Gruzinov and Matthias Zaldariaga, and Lev Kaufman had independently proposed the similar mechanism. So the idea is, and it's very well suited for the string theory, because the idea is very simple. So in string theory, so in the usual picture, what happens? We have inflation, there is some energy density of inflation, and then that gets converted into radiation, right? And that gets converted through the decay rate of the inflaton. Now, in string theory, decay rate is not a constant, it's a modulus, right? Because couplings in string theory are modulus. And so those moduli can fluctuate during inflation. And so what happens is that during you have this moduli, let's call it, let's take the modulus chi for simplicity, and let's consider the dimension 5 operator, okay? So I have this dimension 5 operator, and this is my phi, which finally decays into quarks and leptons, whatever. So these are standard model particles. Now, the decay rate is proportional to chi square. In this particular case, it's chi square, can be other power. So what is the picture then? So you have this chi, which just sits there and fluctuates during inflation. Carries no energy, nothing, fluctuations are tiny, so it does not contribute to anything to the energy density of the universe, almost. So there are no perturbations imprinted in the curvature during that period. But the perturbations are imprinted during the reheating. Why? Because the point is, it's obvious, because chi fluctuates, when reheating comes, the decay rate of the inflaton in one causal so let's consider two super horizon regions, okay? So super horizon region number one and number two, and let's normalize their clocks so that the scale factor is the same in two regions, right? So then, with the same value of the scale factor, I have different values of the decay rates. And obviously, because there are different values of the decay rates, the final energy density in this region and this region will be different for the same value of the scale factor, and that will give you adiabatic density perturbations. Coupling to be what?
Coupling modulus to be light enough.
Yeah, it has to be. But its usual story, it has to be of order the Hubble, a little bit less than Hubble. But that's the typical value of all the moduli masses, right? It has to fluctuate, right? You need, like, I don't know, 10 times lighter than the Hubble. Mass square should be 1 over 10 of Hubble square.
So it's EV?
Whatever your Hubble is, depends. M is a parameter in this theory, right? So.
Yeah, what's really happening is that it's an isochronic fluctuation.
No.
And it is inducing adiabatic fluctuation. There's a no-go theorem that you cannot produce super.
No-go theorem, no, that's not true. No-go theorem holds for one-field models, slow roll inflation one-field models. That's not true here, because it's obvious, I mean, clearly, right? So so you don't have any. But I'm not producing from. No, I'm not producing from nothing. That's not true. I'm not producing from nothing. No, I'm not producing from nothing. I'm producing from I have a scalar field which controls my pump, okay? So I pump energy from the inflationary energy density to the matter. A dead pump fluctuates.
That is an entropy fluctuation.
What do you mean? You call it entropy fluctuation? I end do different rows in different super horizon regions. Now call it as you want, I don't know. Well, in semantics, maybe, but I'm saying the end story is that you have one super horizon region, the other super horizon region. I have two observers. They measure the same value of the scale factor. They measure different energies. So delta rho over rho is simply delta gamma over gamma, delta chi over chi. You disagree with that?
He is using a different mechanism.
Yeah, that's what I was telling him. Right, exactly. This no-go theorems, they hold for one field model. You have to be very careful.
Why don't we continue this discussion in the?
Well, this is a fact, session. Right? What is that you disagree with here? Tell me. I know I'm telling him. Okay. No, I will be happy to discuss, because absolutely, this is an important thing to make sure that this whole thing works. Anyway, so let me be more specific here, okay? So what is the spectrum of fluctuations in this theory, okay? Now, the spectrum, naively would say the spectrum of fluctuations will be almost flat, right? Because the reason is, what is the reason? The reason is that in the standard case, the reason why we had this beautiful talk by Slava, so in standard case, why do we have tilt in the spectrum? The reason is that, there are two reasons actually, but the main thing is that the Hubble parameter changes, and also there is an evolution on the super horizon of the perturbations, right? And both add so that they create some tilt. I mean, in particular, they could add to zero if you design models in this way. But anyway, that's the reason. So now, in our case, H is constant, okay? So therefore, the perturbations then, when they exit the horizon, they have the same amplitude. So there is no tilt created at that point. The tilt is created, however, because different perturbations, they spend different times on the super horizon. And so they slowly slide down this potential because of the mass term. So this is the equation for these perturbations. Now, by the way, the equation is much simpler than in the standard case, because in our case, because the scale is low, all we have to solve is for the fluctuating scalar field in the given background, because gravitational waves are completely negligible. And so if mu were constant, let's for a moment assume that mu is a constant, okay? If mu were constant, then once the fluctuation crosses outside the horizon, this becomes unimportant. So we just have an oscillator which slowly tries to bring this amplitude down. Okay, so the amplitudes would decrease exponentially. And now it's obvious why it would create tilt, because different perturbations, they spend different times at the super horizon before we are observing them. Okay, and so tilt would be this, given by this. However, there is no reason to expect that this is constant. But there is no reason, because there can be cross couplings between the fluctuating fields and the field which drives inflation, the oscillating one. Okay. So what can be the, what type of cross couplings you may have? You may have cross couplings that are in the superpotential. We are assuming only Planck scale suppressed couplings in the superpotential, because otherwise, obviously, this won't work. You have cross couplings in the superpotential and couplings in the Keller. Now, the couplings in the superpotential, most likely they have some power law dependence on the oscillating field. But couplings in Keller, they can have dependence log of phi, log square of phi, because of perturbative renormalization, because Keller is not protected by any theorem. So the effective mass, so now because this decreases the average amplitude, the effective mass, the average mass of the phi, depends on the number of e-foldings in this way. So the superpotential couplings, they drop exponentially, okay? And so they only become important at early times. But the late times, they're completely unimportant. So the only imprint of these superpotential couplings could be that they can cut the spectrum at large wavelengths. Okay? They can abruptly cut the spectrum at large wavelengths. But the Keller couplings, they give you running. Why? Because Keller is suppressed by supersymmetry breaking scale, which in our case is order h squared. Right? And so therefore, they are not, they cannot cut your spectrum down, but they can they can give you running. And so, basically, let me just quote the result. So if you assume this kind of dependence, so the dependence of on n comes out like this. And so you can have sharp cutoff at large distances if you have couplings in the superpotential, high dimensional couplings in the superpotential. And by the way, this, if you plug supersymmetry breaking scales and lowest possible high dimensional couplings, comes out pretty close to the present horizon. But of course, it's model dependent, because you can suppress couplings by symmetries, etc. But the Keller couplings are less model dependent, because naively, normally you would expect that there are some loop factors times d logs, and so you have this type of running, which is pretty unusual, because normally running is like inverse log, but we have running which is proportional to log and to log square. So so we can read Keller in the sky, in a sense. I mean, and so these are the observable signatures of this. Of this model. So what is the conclusion from here is that, we should look for the different regimes of inflation, not necessarily for the slow roll. Now, the point is that, of course, always you need some clock. You cannot avoid it. You need some clock which changes slowly, but that clock need not be a local scalar field. It may be an average value of the scalar field which changes slowly, and so maybe there is some other language in which you do some rotation in the Hilbert space, like Andre suggested that, and in which you can rewrite this again and say some slow roll inflation, but in different language. Okay? But obviously in that language there is no problem with the slow roll, because the amplitude can decrease slowly, even though fields, they move very fast. Okay? So now let me go to the... How much time do I have? I have to finish in 40, right? 20 minutes. Okay, great. Okay, great. So let me now move to the second subject. Okay, so the second subject is that, again, this is about non-standard clock, but at the very late one. So the late clock, we know that the universe is accelerating. We don't know why it is accelerating. So one possible idea is that the acceleration may be because of some new gravitational physics. So in a sense, maybe gravity gets modified at large distances, and so that's why we get accelerated acceleration. And in reality, maybe there is no dark energy. Now, Now, this is easy to say, but it's pretty hard to implement. It's pretty hard to construct a theory which is consistent and has no garbage like ghosts and tachyons and negative norm states and gives you consistent predictions and has this property. But generically, you say, okay, if I want to do that, this means that my Einstein's action has to be corrected by some terms, which we don't know what they are. They can come from extra dimension in particular, which are scaled by some crossover scales. So they become important only at very small curvatures. Okay? And the question is, I mean, there are many questions. Are these models viable? Do they make any sense? So I will try to answer one aspect of it, okay, which is most controversial. First of all, what I want to say that is the following. Now, the moment, I don't want to consider theories which are trivial modification of gravity. So if they are reducible to gravity plus simply some scalar field or gravity plus something else, I don't want to. My arguments will not apply to those theories. My arguments will apply to the theories which are not reducible to simply gravity plus something else. Okay. It's a wide class of theories which admits formally speaking, the graviton propagator admits the spectral representation of Chern-Lehmann in at least in continuum of modes with positive definite norm states. Okay. If they are ghosts and some other disease in the theory, then of course the arguments can be different. Now the thing is that GR is a very constrained theory, so it's not easy to play around with GR at large distances. Because the reason is the following: that the requirement that the mass of the graviton has a zero mass essentially fixes the low energy action uniquely. Okay, so this is fixed. Period. You cannot mess around with it. So if you require gauge invariance and the fact that graviton is massless, that's it. So this means that any departure from this action, it will imply that your theory is not reducible to a simple theory of massless spin 2 particle. Okay? It has to be something else. So this means that your theory implies that once you modify GR, no matter at how large distances, you introduce new degrees of freedom. And so there is a discontinuity. And those degrees of freedom will show up at short distances because they are degrees of freedom. You can not just get rid of them by taking m to zero. Okay? Essentially the bottom line is that the graviton acquires 5 polarizations. Okay, so one of them is scalar, the other two are vector. The vector ones are not so dangerous because they don't couple to us, but the scalar ones, they do couple. But these are not separate scalars. You cannot just rewrite this theory as gravity plus a scalar, because this scalar is a polarization of graviton. Okay. No, I'm not considering arbitrary functions of curvature are disaster.
No, it's not disaster.
R squared, yes, if they only depend on R, like you guys, then they are simply reducible to gravity plus scalar.
So
if it's simply reducible to gravity plus scalar, then you can simply give mass to that scalar or do something else, and that's different. These other polarizations in these theories that I'm considering, they are protected by general covariance. So you cannot simply give mass to the scalar and say it's not coupled to us, okay? And let me just consider on a concrete example, but what I will say is very general. It applies a huge class of these theories, but it's always good to have concrete example. So the example is in which four-dimensional gravity gets modified at large distances. You can write down this theory with this brain-walled model in which you have five-dimensional gravity which lives in the bulk. And then you have boundary term of the graviton on the brain. And so there is one additional parameter, which is a crossover scale. And so in this theory, what happens is that if you have an observer, so there are two observers. One sends gravitational wave to the other one. So this gravitational wave compromises. For a while, it propagates like a four-dimensional state and then decays into extra dimension. So this is like a theory of an unstable graviton, if you wish. Okay, if as viewed as a four-dimensional theory, this is a theory of in theory in which graviton is a resonance. But it is generally covariant, of course. And so original motivation was that this theory has a self-accelerated branch, because if you consider an observer who lives on the brain, this observer knows nothing about extra dimension. This observer sees the modified Friedman equation. So Friedman equation gets corrected by h squared minus h. And so this term dominates in far infrared. So early cosmology is completely normal. Everything, inflation, whatever you want, is normal. But at late times, this kicks in, and you get self-accelerated branch. And whoever is interested in numbers, I just pledge this transparency, that you can differentiate this model from the other models of dark energy, because there is very different redshift to luminosity dependence for this curve, in contrast with the for example, with just cosmological constant, because transition is different. But anyway, this is not the main point of my theory. I just want to discuss the influence of these new modes at short distances. So basically, the point is that if you, from the point of view of four-dimensional observer, okay, the linearized equation for this seemingly four-dimensional graviton is a little bit unusual. Okay, it reminds, in some sense, massive gravity. But instead of mass, there is this operator, which is square root of box divided by this crossover scale. Now, of course, this looks weird from the point of four dimensions, but it's just five-dimensional gravity. And obviously, whenever you try to translate high-dimensional theory, intrinsically high-dimensional theory, as four-dimensional theory, you get some operators like this, which that's not surprising. Nothing surprising about it. But I wrote in the four-dimensional language because I want to compare with massive gravity. So the difference is just we have something different here, but the tensor structure is very similar. So now, if you do the following thing, if you do, let's say we do one particle exchange, okay? So we have two sources localized on the brain, like this is us and this is sun, let's say, and we exchange one graviton. In this theory, the amplitude has the following form. In Einstein gravity, it has the following form. So there are two differences. One is that propagator gets modified. There is this additional p divided by rc, piece, and by short distances, if RC is of order the horizon size, this term is unimportant. Okay, and so that's okay. There is a continuity there, but there is discontinuity here because you have one third here and one half here, just because you have different number of degrees of freedom. And this discontinuity is not disappearing at short distances. You still have different degrees of freedom. In other words, if you write full propagator, so here I've listed three different propagators. So this is propagator in this high-dimensional model, okay, graviton propagator. This is graviton propagator in massive gravity, Pauli-Firth's massive gravity, which is the only massive gravity free of ghosts and other states, other unphysical states, and the Einstein gravity. Now, the difference is that there are two differences. There is this one-third here in massive gravity versus one-half in Einstein gravity. That's additional polarization. But also, this additional polarization contributes terms like this in this tensor structure. This is just because graviton acquired longitudinal degrees of freedom. Those have terms singular in the mass of the graviton, in massive case, and in this object, in our case. Okay. So what is the moral from here? The moral is that although you have continuity, so we see that there is a discontinuity in the propagator. But does that mean anything? A priori, discontinuity on the propagator means nothing, because of the following reason. Because if we are measuring gravity near the heavy sources, just like we are measuring gravity near the solar system, we have to know how these additional polarizations behave near the heavy sources, because they may get strongly coupled. And so simply the fact that you have discontinuity in the linearized propagator may mean nothing. You have to know how they behave near the heavy sources and how nonlinearities behave. And that's a very important point, actually. And this is what I want to stress. So, indeed, so what happens, it turns out that if you consider this kind of three graviton vertexes, so these three graviton vertexes, they blow up like with this coefficient. You see that this coefficient is singular in the graviton mass for the massive gravity. In our case, this has to be substituted by 1 over RC divided by P squared, so there will be cubic singularity, okay? And so in other words, suppose you say, okay, I want to take this theory and I want to compute in G Newton expansion using Feynman diagrams, I want to compute how planets orbit around the sun, okay? So you do the one graviton exchange, okay, fine, this is proportional to G Newton. Then you do this kind of diagram. Again, three levels. So now this diagram, which is G Newton square, and naively would say that it should be subdominant. It's not subdominant, actually. This is like 10 to the, I don't remember, 15 times bigger than this one, okay, in the solar system. What's the reason? The reason is that, as we discovered with Cedric Defaye, Gabadadze, and Arkady Weinstein, we computed this diagram, and we were sort of, at the beginning, we were shocked because we realized that the gravitons are getting strongly coupled at this funny scale because they have singular couplings. in mass of the graviton, or in our case, they have singular couplings in 1 over the crossover scale. So what is the moral from here? The moral from here is that the only conclusion you can draw from here is that G Newton expansion breaks down, period. So it's not a good expansion parameter anymore. So either you find a good expansion parameter and you resum your theory, and then you take your resum solution, compute all the curvature invariants, and compare them with the fundamental scale. If they are bigger, your theory is sick. If they are smaller, your theory is fine. That's what we do in Einstein theory, right? When we compute Schwarzschild solution. So a priori, this fact that these couplings blow up means nothing until we know that the curvature invariants blow up, right? And so there is some solutions exist for, at the tree level. These some solutions exist for many situations. They were shown by these groups, and there were others. So cosmological solution is perfectly continuous. Cosmic strings and Schwarzschilds, they do exist. And so, for instance, let me quote Schwarzschild. So it exhibits some interesting behavior. So this is a resummed Schwarzschild. In other words, resummed, I mean, of course, nobody has resummed all the Feynman diagrams. Instead, people went and solved for Schwarzschild in the theory, as we should do. And in the 1 over RC expansion, instead of G Newton expansion. Of course, whenever you have a theory which has two parameters, when you expand in one, your solution cannot be analytic in both, usually. It's analytic in one. So it's analytic in 1 over RC, but there are non-analyticities in the gravitational radius of the body. Okay, but you see that there is a continuity, at least in this expansion. Now, so what is the moral from here? So let's say... And now, for this particular resummation, if you compute curvature invariants, they are perfectly well behaved. So there is no blow up, as it should be, because it's sort of intuitively clear, because you are correcting a little bit your metric, and yeah, that will correct a little bit your curvature, because there is no strong coupling behavior in this limit. But anyway, what is the moral? The moral, nevertheless, is quite interesting. You see that these corrections, which you naively would say that I modified gravity at very large distances, this correction should be suppressed by 1 over the crossover scale, they are enhanced by the gravitational radius of the body. So not they are, of course, they are suppressed by the crossover scale, but they are enhanced by the gravitational radius of the body. Great. And so they may be very important for the light sources. So you see that if source may overcompensate. Why? Because for the light sources, nonlinearities are less important. Now, I know that Thibault had certain questions about matching in massive gravity at large distance behavior, etc., which are pretty interesting. So they did similar analysis in massive gravity, and their conclusion was that in massive gravity, you correct me if I'm wrong, that there is no regular solution, right? And that may signal that maybe for massive gravity flat space is not even a solution, but here you don't expect this kind of stuff. Anyway, so this is the general prescription how any gravitating source behaves. So take any gravitating source, let's say sun. Okay, so the sun has three gravitational scales around it. There is RG, then there is a scale which we call R star. This is so in this interval, gravity is Einstein gravity with small correction. But then in this interval, gravity is not like Einstein gravity. It's like more looks like scalar tensor as far as tensor structure is concerned. And then in this interval, gravity becomes simply high-dimensional Einstein gravity. So the relative corrections to the metric are pretty strong. You see that these relative corrections, although they are small, they are still strong. And they are potentially observable. So this is precisely this effect that you cannot get rid of additional degrees of freedom for free. They will show up somewhere nearby. And so we have to deal with them. And for instance, it seems like, so then you can ask the question, can they be seen in some experiments which do precision measurements of planetary orbits? It turns out that Moon is the best place to look for them. Because Moon is at the right distance from the Earth, Earth has the right gravitational radius, and so Moon is very well studied. So essentially, it seems that the deviation for the lunar orbit is like by a factor of 30 away from the existing limit, and so these limits it's pretty interesting. At least these limits can be improved by this Seattle group, and so there are these, all these lunar ranging experiments, which are very, very interesting. And so potentially it would be possible to rule out modification of gravity at large distances by looking at the planetary motions at the short scales, which is really a peculiarity of the gravity. You cannot expect anything like that for scalar theories or for photon. If you give small mass to photon and take it to be sufficiently small, nothing happens at short distances, okay? But for gravity, it does. And let me just finish by showing you this lunar experiment. I showed it many times. So these experiments are what they are shooting lasers to the moon. And so they have these retro reflectors on the moon brought by this Apollo mission. I can even show the guy who brought them. Okay.
Russian reflectors.
Right. And they were Russian? No. They were made.
No. They are also, they are mainly
used. Oh, they are different. That's right. They are different. Right.
Put by the French.
Exactly. So that's right. And so there are these experiments that they shoot lasers to this. The retro reflectors are like. They have this property, they're like the corner between ceiling and the wall. And if these were mirrors, if I shoot this laser, it will come straight back, independent on the angle. So they shoot the laser to the moon, it comes straight back, independent of the angle, and so they can monitor motion of the lunar orbit. And so it's the current accuracy is 1 centimeter, which is pretty amazing that we know how moon moves by 1 centimeter accuracy, and the expected one is a millimeter. They can go down to millimeter. And I think this is the right place to finish.
Okay, question. Yeah, on moduli spaces, there's also a metric. And it seems to me unlikely that the metric will be diagonal in the same coordinates as the direction
right.
to the potential.
Right. Absolutely.
So
you're right.
Is that likely to give you velocity dependent forces that will kick you down that?
It could, hill? Yes, it could. That's a very good point, actually. Now, so I forgot to mention that it's the diagonality can be guaranteed by symmetries. For instance, if these two fields, they transform under some different symmetries, then you can make sure that this metric, at least in that segment, is diagonal. But in general, you're absolutely right. In general, it may not be diagonal, so it may give you some momentum which will kick you off. Yeah, it could be. We haven't studied that situation because that seems more complicated.
Okay. I just had one more quick other question. Your scale of inflation is very low, so it seemed to me the fluctuations in this chi field are not going to be very big, and you were suggesting...
Yes, but exactly. That's a very good point, but so our fluctuations are delta chi over chi. So this simply means that chi should be, the phone of chi around which it fluctuates should be very small. So, right? So it's, in the other words, our fluctuations are what? They are, let me show the transfer. Well, let me take a chalk. So our fluctuations are delta rho over rho, right, is delta chi, which is like gamma, basically on gamma. So if gamma has to be, what you are saying is that gamma has to be small. So this is like Hubble, so gamma has to be of order Hubble.
But that means gamma being much smaller than just the one that we're in quite suppression. You're talking about the dimension.
No, gamma can, for instance, if you have a 100 MeV particle or whatever, like which decays, if gamma is comparable. Gamma need not be. Yeah, sure. But yes, gamma has to, so it has to be compensated by gamma.
Okay. I have two comments. First of all, in the models of this type, they are characterized by the ratio of the mass of the oscillating field to the Hubble constant. So if the mass of the oscillating field is much larger than Hubble constant, then in fact its amplitude decays very fast because of preheating. Okay.
Right.
If mass is similar to the Hubble constant, then it does not oscillate. So you need to be in a window like mass about 3 Hubble constants, 5 Hubble constants, which is not unreasonable. Okay. But it is still a very special window.
Yes. I can comment on your comment. So basically, what Andre is saying that is if our point was we wanted to say that inflation is probably generic on string moduli spaces. Now, the usual problem that usual criticism to this was that people were saying that typically the masses are of order Hubble, and not smaller. If masses are smaller, then fantastic. We'll get normal inflation, then there is nothing to worry about. So our cure was precisely in that window, because that's precisely the window that moduli masses have, because the moduli, they always have masses of order the Hubble parameter.
Okay.
So that's precise. So we're not tuning anything. We're just saying here what people were saying, there is a problem. Right. Here is no problem.
Yeah. So what happens when mass is much larger than Hubble constant, then interestingly, there, because of preheating, you produce a lot of low energy modes, which may keep you on the top of the potential and not cost you much energy. And that was the basis of a mechanism which we studied with Lev Kofman and Starobinsky many years ago. And what we have found, unfortunately, the theory of preheating is so complicated that in order to study it seriously, you need to have a computer. And with the computer that we had only one guaranteed e-folding because the guy was working 3 months, and that's, I mean, so if we have more time, we'll probably have more e-foldings of it. Now, but a more serious comment is that if the whole goal of the model is to get rid of the flat directions, to have inflation without flat directions, then nevertheless, in the end of the day, we still need these flat directions because otherwise you would not produce density perturbations. So you need flat directions anyway.
No, but this is the question of clock. Sure, I mean, what you are saying, I don't have any objections with that. All we are saying is that these other directions, they are decoupled, they are not the clock. The problem is to keep clocks light. Because you can have lighter fields, but when you want them to, in the same time, control the energy density, that's where the problem comes in. So it's, but you are right, yes, absolutely.
Concerning the second part of your talk, in your final modification of gravity in the solar system, you had a square root.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, each time you see a square root, in general, there is a sign of ambiguity. And I've seen in some of your pictures,
yeah,
you
true,
say
right.
that, in fact, it could be plus or minus the square root.
Absolutely.
So
but
what kind
branches.
Of boundary conditions are there to fix the square root, and is it not linked to an instability
yeah.
of the
Yeah, yeah, so that's a very good question, actually. So we don't know. We suspect that the one of them is linked to instability. So the one of those solutions with plus will decay into the other one. Now, the suspicious is that the plus one decays into the minus one. But we can only, sort of, we have only hits at the linearized level. We could not see really, I mean, how nonlinear solutions evolve, because obviously that's very hard. But you are right, yes, there are two branches. A priori you could say, okay, I can stay with this branch or with that branch, just depends on the initial condition. I suspect one of the branches is unstable. Actually, Rob was asking the same question some time ago.
So I'd like to come back to the question of the adiabatic versus entropy perturbations.
Right.
So you do have a two-field model, so I think basically you're probably safe. But it is important to realize that you cannot produce adiabatic fluctuations on super-Hubble scales in a phase transition. You always produce entropy fluctuations first. And a way to see that is if your mechanism, if you have this decay constant, which is varying, mm-hmm. you are dumping more energy locally into the fermion fields, but at the same time you're draining more energy from the other fields. And so the reference on that is actually papers which were written here in Santa Barbara back in the mid-80s by
I can certainly agree that one has to be careful, and we were extremely careful on that point, because the point is that we are not producing perturbations on the super horizon. Perturbations are produced when they cross out of the horizon. The only difference is that when they cross out of the horizon, those perturbations are imprinted in chi, in this modulus. And they stay there imprinted until the energy density from the inflaton field has to be converted into radiation. And that's where this chi controls the pump by which you control energy density. So in different regions, you end up with different energy densities for the given value of the scale factor. That's for sure. Because the reason is that clearly, in one case, let's say inflaton decays later, so the matter domination is prolonged, in the other one is earlier, so there is a contrast. And so you are absolutely right, one has to be very careful. But here it works. I mean, of course, now, if you add additional things, you could spoil adiabaticity in some sense. Right? For instance, if you postulate that there are some other stuff to which inflaton decays, and then this other stuff is not coupled to chi, but behaves in some funny way, so at the end it dominates, that could wash out your perturbations. That's a different story. But whatever is imprinted will work in this way that I pointed out. We can discuss more. I'll be more than happy to talk about that.
Comment about Robert's remark, and I will help here. It's a terminological issue. It's not essential. What is going on immediately after inflation, fluctuations became adiabatical, period. This is what Guy is trying to say.
Absolutely.
Yes, if you're going into the GR subtleties. Yes, you can think that it's initially isocurvature fluctuations which will be transformed into adiabatical. Right? It's in exact language. But at the end of inflation, there are almost scale-free adiabatical fluctuations.
Exactly, absolutely, I agree, yes. And I forgot to also to mention that there is also a non-Gaussianity which is more than independent. You have lower bound on non-Gaussianity because even if chi is a Gaussian field, the chi square or mod chi is not Gaussian, necessarily not Gaussian. So there is a non-Gaussianity which this FNL function was estimated like 5/2 or something like that. I didn't have that on transparency. Yeah, 5/2. No, 5/2 is 5/2 is okay. Right. Maybe you roll out this model right away.
Other questions, comments? If not, let's thank you again. This,